Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bookmark removed. What's the chapter and verse? 16. Okay. Chapter 16. Okay. 9's the verse we're going to chant. Yeah. But which is the one we're going to chant? What's showing? 9? Can we chant together text number 9? Because that has the purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aham Atmo Devangshi Na Vamisham. Bhutanam Suhrid Ishwaraha. Aham Sarvani Bhutani. Tesham Stit Upabhavapyaha. Aham Atmo Devangshvamisham. Bhutanam Suhrid Ishwaraha. Aham Sarvani Bhutani. Tesham Stit Yubhavapyaha. Aham Atmo Devami Sham. Aham, I am. Atma, the super soul. Uddhava, oh, Uddhava. Amisham, of these. Bhutanam, living entities. Sohrit, the well-wisher. Ishvaraha, the supreme controller. Aham, I am. Sarvani Bhutani, all entities. Tesham, of them. Stiti, the maintenance. Udbhava, creation. Aprayaya, and annihilation. My dear Uddhava, I am the supersoul of all living entities, and therefore I am naturally their well-wisher and supreme controller. Being the creator and maintainer and annihilator of all entities, I am not different from them. Purport. Srila Shridhar Swami points out that the personality of Godhead maintains the an ablative and genitive. Does anybody know what that means? Possessive, personal possessive. Genitive. Ablative and genitive relationship with his opulences. In other words, the Lord is not different from all living entities because they are coming from him and they belong to him. The Lord gave a similar explanation to Arjuna in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 10:20, beginning with the same words, aham atma. Although the Lord describes his external or material opulences, the Lord's position is always transcendental and non-material. Just as the living soul within the body gives life to the body, similarly the Lord, by his supreme potency, gives life to all universal opulences. So, we're supposed to go back to number 6. 6, 7, 8, 9. Yes? Okay. Text 6. The Supreme Personality Godhead said, "Oh, best of those who know how to inquire, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna, desiring to fight with his rivals, ask me the same question that you are now posing." Purport. Lord Krishna was pleased that his two friends, Arjuna and Uddhava, had posed the same question regarding the opulences of the personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna considered it wonderful that his two dear friends had asked exactly the same question. Text 7. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna thought that killing his relatives would be an abominable, irreligious activity motivated only by the desire to acquire a kingdom. He therefore desisted from the battle, thinking, "I would be a killer of my relatives. They would be destroyed." Thus, Arjuna was afflicted with mundane consciousness. Purport. Lord Krishna here explains to Uddhava the circumstances in which Sri Arjuna posed his questions. Text 8. At that time, I enlightened Arjuna, the tiger among men, with logical arguments, and thus in the front of the battle, Arjuna addressed me with questions in the same way that you are now inquiring. And then this one, my dear Uddhava, I am the super soul of all living entities, and therefore I am naturally their well-wisher and supreme controller. Being the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of all entities, I am not different from them. This word, entities, is a seems to me, it's a word borrowed from Bhaktisiddhanta, at least Bhaktisiddhanta used it regularly. Instead of saying things, he would say entities. So, let's go back to 10:20 Bhagavad Gita. 10, because there's the parallel between the two sections, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. 10:20 is the very first verse after the Chaturshloki verses, and Arjuna says, Param, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I was, you know, thinking otherwise, and please pardon me, now please give me the ways by which I can always remember you. So text 19 is Krishna says, yes, I will tell you the ways in which you can remember me. And then the first one is, I'm the Super Soul. And the purport is describing the Vishnu forms, making a distinction between the Bhagavan feature and the Paramatma feature, or Krishna, who is before Arjuna in his two-armed form, if you remember from... No, it comes later. In chapter 11, Krishna says at the end of chapter 11 that this two-armed form is very difficult to behold, and only those who are my pure devotees can behold. So he's speaking from that Bhagavan position, saying that the Purusha avatars are his expansions. That's how Prabhupada is explaining it in the 10:20 purport. And this Vishnu form is the pratishtha, the foundation, the basis of creation. So that's what's similarly being presented here, at least in the second line. Text 9. Stiti Ubhava and Apyaya. Stiti, maintenance. Ubhava, creation. Apyaya, annihilation. So that refers to the material creation, and I, Krishna, is the and the Atma, or the Super Soul of that. I am Vishnu. Vishnu is as my expansion of Vishnu is one of my opulences, a way that you can always remember me. Which is something very similar to what he says at the end of the whole description of the Vibhutis, with but a single fragment of myself. I maintain and support the entire universe. So the concluding remark and the opening remark are quite similar. And then in between is the Vibhutis of the Personality of Godhead. So the Vibhutis, it's a nice term, opulences. The Lord's opulence, that's the title of this chapter, 16, and same opulences of the Absolute, Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, the Sanskrit word is Vibhuti. And at the beginning of chapter 3 of Canto 1, where Sutta is answering, what are the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world? Prabhupada outlines there's direct and there's indirect. And the direct can be himself or his empowered incarnations, Shaktyavesh avatars. And then there's the indirect, Prabhupada uses this language, indirect, and that's the Vibhutis. So those are opulences of him in this world. And indirectly, he manifests these opulences. They're his opulences, but as opposed to directly, it's indirectly. That's the distinction that Prabhupada makes. Or we'll say it this way, same thing. In the spiritual world, there's Bhagavan, and he possesses opulences, and those opulences are bhagas, and he's the van, he's the possessor of those opulences, and there's six principal opulences, according to Parashara Muni, and all riches, all fame, all knowledge, etc. And those are his bhagas, and those are direct. And then there's the indirect ones, that's within this material creation, the sthiti, etc., created, maintained, and annihilated ones. And those are his opulences also, but they're indirect, but there's a relationship between them in which they are his, this genitive and ablative. It's his, or it's in one sense him. His opulences are part of him, even the material ones. So the material opulence, you go through the opulences of the of horses, I am Uchaishrava, and of mountains, I am the Himalayas, of I'm the best of whatever is out there, I'm the best of it. Of course, he's everything that's not the best of it also. But to think of him, he's the best of everything. And those are vibhutis, opulences. So like, you know, metal. All metals are metals, and they're metals that are, but they're metals that are considered opulent metals for various reasons. And of metals, I am gold. Or of precious stones, I am, he doesn't say those, but you know, the best of anything. That's vibhutis. And what we're hearing in this verse, and then explained very succinctly in the purport, is those opulences are supported by the presence of Supersoul. Say it again. Those opulences are supported by the presence of Supersoul. And the example that's given is the soul that's within the body gives life to the body. The body appears to be alive because the presence of the soul. Similarly, the opulences, the vibhutis of the Lord, are vibhutis because of the presence of Supersoul. No, it's not like there's a number of distinctions or differences in that metaphor, because the soul may leave the body. It will eventually leave the body. And then life leaves the body because the soul leaves the body. But Supersoul doesn't leave. So it's not, now you see it, now you don't. There's an opulence that's sustained by the presence of Supersoul. It's he's going down this path. It's the same question Arjuna's asked. And the first, what are your opulences? At the very beginning of the chapter, like the first verse of this chapter 16, Vishwanath explains the term vibhuti. So I'm tempting to do that a little clumsily. But in essence, it's the same thing that's in this purport, which is it's something that's it shows a special degree of power or potency or knowledge. It gives a little list. And all of those specialities, they're from the Supreme. It's like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, I'm remembrance. I'm knowledge. And he's also forgetfulness. So whatever there is comes from him. And specifically, one more time, vibhutis are a superlative degree of something that is of strength, of knowledge, or some exhibition of potency within the material world. This sthiti, udbhava, upyaya. Bhagas don't appear and disappear. Vibhutis may appear and disappear. The Himalayas appear and disappear. They stay a long time, but then they disappear. But it's, nonetheless, when they're manifest, they're supported by the personality of Godhead in his Paramatma feature, or Aham Atma. One other point of curiosity, this word entities, that's where I started the discussion. It can have different, there are different applications of the term depending upon the context. So in the first part of the verse, and as well as the first part of the purport, it appears that the application is the soul. Living entities can commonly do, it means the soul. But it can also mean the temporary body, as the second half says. Being the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of all entities, well, gee, that's not the soul. So it's not the soul. If it's not the soul, then what does entities refer to? Things of this world. You know, living entities. Or entities. You know, things. I am not different from them. So the emphasis that Krishna is presenting here is emphasis on the non-difference aspect of things that are temporary of the material world. They come and they stay and they go. There's a non-difference relationship between the source and that which is emanated from the source. Must be. How can there be anything that doesn't have its connection with the Supreme? Or put it really simply, Prabhupada said, there's two things. There's Krishna, and there's Krishnas. And there's not a third thing. And then he went on to say, there's no void in the creation of God. Because void would mean, then there's a third thing. There's something where there's nothing. So there's two things, Krishna and Krishnas. There's no void in the creation of God. So his vibhutis, or the non-difference aspect of even things that aren't spectacular or superlative, there's a non-different relationship between matter and spirit and the controller of both. There's a difference, there's varieties of differences, and there's a non-difference. And that's inconceivable, therefore, achintya. Inconceivable in the sense that the mind cannot conceive of it. The mind is binary. It's either this or that. It's a one or a zero. It's on or it's off. Like, you know, we're inside the room or we're outside the room. We can't be both inside the room. It's binary. And how the mind can't conceive of us being, any one of us being simultaneously inside the room and outside the room. But Krishna can. In fact, he is. He's inside everything and not inside everything. Everything is within him, everything is not within him. It's double talk. But it's his opulence. It's his mystic power, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. It's his difference and non-difference feature of the personality of Godhead. So, summary. When going through this opulences, it's important to understand the foundation of them, the non-difference feature. They exist because they're his. And because they're his, in one sense, they're non-different than him. I'll just do one other thing and see if there's some lively Alachua-esque discussion on the topic. Alachua has a very special potency in terms of questions and after class. Time. As an example, time has a non-difference and a difference aspect. Time I am, kalos me. Pretty straightforward, time I am. And then there's time energy. So there's the energetic and there's time energy. And then there's eternal time and past, present, and future time. There's different kinds of time. Just like there's the internal potency and there's the external potency. In the process of creation, it's just a slow motion little detail, the same thing. Mahavishnu desires the living entities who are in the latent susupti state within his body that they don't have to be so covered. He wants them. He desires Icha, that they experience the fullness of the potential of happiness. Compassion. And conveniently and coincidentally, he sees his Chaya Devi, the maid servant who is pradhan, who has nothing to do. And he knows that she wants some service to do, and so he compassionately desires she should have some service also. Just desires. Two desires of compassion. And Rama Devi, his internal pleasure potency, she knows her master, and so she facilitates the icha of her master, and she sends one of her subordinate energies, the time energy, which is in her realm eternal, along with the living entities, to, along with the glands of Mahavishnu, to pradhan. And then that time energy becomes the time energy that we know, the past, present, or future kind, because you need that to have activity. You can't have activity without time. It's kind of obvious. You can't have activity without time. So time is there. She knows her program. She sends the time energy. But then, like Prabhupada says, in the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. Right? That means time as we know it, the past, present, and future type. But certainly there's eternal time. He has his Nitya Lila. And then there's him. So there's his time energy in the spiritual dimension, time energy in the material dimension, and there's him. They're both his. Time energy, and they move according to his indication. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to lift Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. He doesn't need to lift a pinky to do anything. He just icha, that's it. And then there's Leela that carried out his icha. So there's the spiritual and there's the material, and time energy is involved in both, and they're his, or in this ablative and genitive. I learned a new word this morning. Terminology. Because they're his, they're in a sense him. And because they're his, they're in a sense not him, they're his. Different, not different and different. So as we go along in hearing, just like chapter 10, so also here, you're going to carry on with this chapter. They're his. Or it may say him, because that's what how he ends the verse. Or, I am not different from them. Okay, I'm ready for the question-answer session in Alachua. Yes.
Could you explain a bit of the subtle differences between a non-moving entity and a moving entity in regards to, you know, remembering, forgetting, and time? Like, is a rock a non-moving entity, living entity?
Well, that's a lovely question. My understanding of the non-moving living entities is in terms of trees and plants and those that don't have legs. No, but your question is about rocks and other entities. So, that was your question. No, but it's not... Let's just do it again. My understanding is flawed. But my understanding is chara and achara. There's the moving and non-moving. And the moving living entities are those that have wings and legs and things like that. And that, yes, trees are growing and stuff, but they're not moving in the sense of moving as with legs and wings. Therefore, that's in the category of achara. Now, what about, are there souls within rocks? Is that what your question is, basically? Janmashtami wants to give his Janmashtami purport, but that's a lachua for you. Wait a minute. He's next, and then you're next. So somebody from China asked me this question because they were studying it in Chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, with a little research, you know, I'm ready for other opinions. But wherever there is, is Super Soul everywhere? And is Super Soul alone? Living entity. So like the description that's there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it is said, Lord Chaitanya delivered all living entities and said, well, you know, be careful, what are you saying? I see so many living entities. And the answer is, well, the ones that were there were liberated, and now the ones that were not animate are now animate. And they took their place. So where'd those souls come from? They came from all kinds of places where it wasn't apparently not alive, but in this dormant condition. Wherever there's a super soul, which is everywhere, there's soul. In rocks. Now let's get the objection program going here. Janmashtami, and then this Prabhu, and then Tamahar. Welcome to Alachua.
The super soul here, is this referring to Paramatma, or is it also the Purusha avatars?
The Purusha avatars.
Right.
That was easy. Raise your hand again, please. Yeah.
So I want to touch on 2 points. I'm thinking time is also present in the spiritual world, but the effect is not the same as in the material world.
Correct.
Can we agree on that? Well,
I said it already.
Okay.
Eternal time is present in the spiritual world, but not time as we know it.
Yeah.
Time as we know it is absent.
Yeah. The other point is, I'm thinking the incomprehension comes about here, that the experience of the Lord and our experience is vastly different, really. And things that he speaks about, we sometimes we cannot experience it or we can't touch upon it, really. For example, he says, well, everything is mine, or I am everything, but then I am, and I'm different from everything.
Yeah.
You know, but we...
That's
we,
Krishna speaking, right?
Yeah. We don't have that experience in any way or form.
Okay.
And so sometimes the incomprehension comes about. See?
From a different perspective, you're saying. Inconceivable because perspective is different?
Yeah.
It's outside of our experience and therefore inconceivable. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Tamahar?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for coming, and thank you for the class. I had a personal experience with Srila Prabhupada about the question of, do stones have souls?
Ah.
In Potomac in 1976, Srila Prabhupada visited, and I was in the darshan, when Sarup Damodar and the other scientists were presenting sort of their draft of Life Comes from Life, or one of their main books. and they were presenting those ideas to Srila Prabhupada to kind of check them out, make sure they were on the right track. And so at one point, Sri Ramadhar, he was a brahmachari at the time, was saying, he was talking about life and non-life, and he says, you know, gave examples of where life is. And he says, and then we see there are objects without the soul or without life like stones. And Prabhupada goes, oh. He says, sometimes stones can have souls. And then, you know, it's kind of like everyone stopped, and it's kind of like they're thinking about how they have to rewrite this chapter, you know. And so they further inquired, and Prabhupada, you know, and they talked about the symptoms of life, you know, of growth coming into existence, having byproduct. And then he talked about how mountains grow,
yes,
like that. And then there was examples given of crystals, you know, that grow like that. You know, so there was these examples I could understand that things like rocks and mountains could also have souls. But then somebody asked, you mean all these rocks on the ground, they don't appear to have any life symptoms? Prabhupada says, no, they're dead. Oh, he says, well, of course, they had a soul, they came into existence, and now they don't. He says, just like if you go into the forest, there's a tree, it falls down, and then you see the sort of the rotting dead stump. It had a soul, it was alive, and now it's a dead body. So in the same way, many of these stones are kind of like dead bodies, in a sense. Anyway, it was very, very interesting and a different perspective that we all got. I don't think we'd ever heard that before.
Ragamika. Ragatmika, Ragatmika. No, 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 no.
Yeah, I get the,
no,
I get
no,
the,
no.
I
you're
get
next.
The title of that.
No,
project.
No. Follow. You get it
I
get, next.
I get the title.
You
of
get
the
it next.
It was
you
called
get it next.
The Origins Stittity. Of
Stittity.
Life and Matter.
Stittity.
Life is a manifestation of life only.
We'll give you the microphone next. Go ahead.
You made reference to a Bhagavad Gita verse wherein Krishna states, with but a spark of myself, I pervade and support these entire universes.
Yeah.
What is that spark? What is he referring to? As
Vishnu. You know, similar to Janmashtami's question. Is it Paramatma or is it Purusha avatars in general? It's the Purusha avatars in general. It's the Purusha avatars. Because you can make a distinction between the function of each of the Purusha avatars, but it's the Purusha avatars. That's my understanding. Is that all right?
So the spark is referring to... this is Krishna saying, through my Vishnu form,
yes,
I pervade and support the
yes.
entire universe.
Yes, yes.
Not through my super soul manifestation.
Well, that's... Now, different. How are you making a distinction?
Okay.
Super soul is one of the Vishnu forms. He's Shiradakshai Vishnu.
Okay, yeah.
Okay?
Right, thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Stittadi, you want to read the thing again?
No, it was just a small thing. You know, they were working on a book, and, you know, Tom Har was mentioning it.
Go ahead, read.
No, I don't have the whole book?
No. The little passage you wanted us to hear.
Oh, yeah. You know, because we, you know, I forget, is Bhakti Nimi Maharaj Gyanadas was here. So we were interviewing him. He was one of the original people of that conference.
Speak into the mic.
So we got some confirmation of it. Apparently, this we have a table of contents for that book that was being discussed.
Save the commentary. Read the passage.
Yeah, it was called The Origin of Life and Matter. Life is a manifestation of life only. And they have different proposed chapters here from Bhakti Sri Ramadhar, from Richard Prabhu, from Gyana Das, you know, it's going to contribute,
yeah.
Madhava Das.
Yeah.
And then the last chapter, The Original Life is Krishna, is going to be a collective effort. But what they were hoping to do is get Prabhupada to write something for that last chapter. And they did bits and pieces of it, but it never came together.
What was the passage you wanted us to hear from all of this commentary?
You want me to say something more profound?
Just read the passage again. Do me a favor.
The origin of life and matter. Life is a manifestation of life only. That was the project, apparently, that Tamahar was involved in the conversation. There was a project. You know, it was a real seminal... I don't know if that's the right word, foundational type thing that was being discussed at the time of Prabhupada.
Okay.
But didn't quite come through in that form in the end. Though I'm sure it had a profound influence that we still are benefiting from.
Fantastic. Thank you. Back there? And then in front of you.
And this, the way that Krishna is explaining how he's in different potencies in different places, are they upgradable according to the condition of the living entity's relationship with Krishna? Like
upgradable? Could you explain what you mean by the question?
Yeah, sure. That, like, for instance, the super soul is generally Vishnu, but yet when Krishna interacts with his pure devotee, is it still Vishnu, or does it get upgraded to Krishna? Does Krishna enter in? Well,
no,
it's still Vishnu. It's
he
not.
He hasn't entered. Krishna reciprocates. Keep it real simple. Don't get so complicated. Krishna reciprocates with the love of his devotees, and as they aspire according to their affection for him, he discloses himself accordingly. Just like, you know, Yamshamasundara Chinchaguna Swarupam. He shows his Shamasundara form depending upon the bhav, or the affection of the devotee. Although it's Vishnu, he shows Shamsundara according to the affection of his devotee.
That's what I meant, is
upgradable. Okay. In front, and then back here, yes.
Maharaj, in your discussion, we were talking about Krishna and everything belongs to Krishna and everything is non-different, like that. So I was just wondering if this is a basis for, like, the Mayavad philosophy to think, well, everything is one, everything is Krishna.
Sure.
I'm also God.
They just shut it down with that one. Yeah. There are sections, statements like this, they go to town. Yay, victory. Yeah, they go in through that doorway into the realm of Kevala Advaita. That's what they do with that stuff. They don't take the big picture, they just do that one and shut everything else down. Okay, Mataji? Yes? You know her. You can give her the microphone.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So I just want to clarify, are all living entities vibhutis of Krishna?
Well, that's not what's being said here. That's not what's being said here. He's speaking two things primarily. I am aham atma, that's the verse. I am the supersoul. So he is the supersoul of living entities. He's the basis of those living entities. They exist on him, or, you know, of him. They're his. The living entities are his. Which isn't specifically about vibhutis. Vibhutis are specifically about the material opulences, the indirect manifestation of Krishna's superlative potency. So it's two different topics within one verse. But the introduction to the vibhuti topic is, I'm the supersoul of everything. I'm the supersoul of a living entity. And these opulences that are created, maintained, and destroyed after some time, they're connected to me also. Those are my vibhutis. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, there's a question up front here. Oh, there's some. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Two things I wanted to ask or mention. One is, I've heard Srila Prabhupada very specifically say, you're sitting on Krishna, you're walking on Krishna. So in the sense that every particle, there is Krishna in every particle. Well, so what the question was about in rocks and soil and everything, so that means the Vishnu Murti is in every particle?
What? Let me ask you the question and to answer to your question. Is Super Soul everywhere or not?
He says, I'm with the living entities. So
answer my question. Is Super Soul everywhere? Is Super Soul within every atom or not?
Okay. I would say so. Yes.
So there's the answer to your question.
Okay.
Is he within the atom of earth, and within the atom of rock, and within the atom of the floor.
Okay.
And if you don't want to sit on the floor, sit on a mat. Then is he in the atom of the mat? Oh, you're sorry. You know, he's within every atom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're sitting on him.
Yes. And the other, a question I have was that when the soul moves from one body to the next, the super soul is going with the soul.
Oh yes, super soul doesn't stay at home. Goes with. Okay, Ragamika wants to add something, and then we're going two more questions, then we're going to try to end.
Just to expand on the answer to her question, the first question, this is why Srila Prabhupada would never touch his feet to anything, by to move it, to kick it, or to push it aside. He would not tolerate that. Because Krishna's there.
I see your hand, Janmashtami, but he had his hand up first, so he's going to come before you, and then you.
Thank you, Maharaj, for coming to Alachwaran. Having a wonderful class.
I just spoke for 5 minutes and you're all doing the talking. That's a latch I learned after some time. Go ahead.
Well, you initiated the conversation, so that's great. This is something that I've been hankering upon. As you said, there is yes or no as far as human being is concerned. And Srila Prabhupada's verses purports the same thing is described in one way and in the next way.
No problem.
How does
a little guy like you understand that? Something like that?
Yes. Where does you start? Where do you start from to imbibe some of those things?
Well,
does it change from time to time, or
no? That there's at least two things. There's this there's the big picture. And as an acharya, he sees the big picture. He knows the big picture. The big picture is inside of him. He's giving us the big picture. And so the big picture includes sometimes this and sometimes that, because that's the big picture. So now, language is another part of that big picture. Language has use according to the context, or meaning according to context. So we have to understand our founder Acharya's language and also his intention, you know, at this part of this big picture thing. So, there's some recent examples I've come across where just in a section he says definitively, such and such. And then over there, it's not such and such, it's something else. Wait a minute, just a few purports ago, he said definitively such and such. So, your question is, how are we to process that?
Right.
Let me keep going for just a second.
Okay.
So, try to see the big picture. Don't get stuck on the, it's got to be a one or a zero. It can't be both a one and a zero. And don't get stuck there. Go to, what's the big picture? What is the message that our founder, Acharya, who certainly knows the difference between a one and a zero, is saying one over here and zero over there? It's not a mistake. What's the intention? What's the big picture that he's trying to help us get? It can be different things in different times. There's a certain emphasis, and there's a certain emphasis.
Right.
See, in one sense, it's a test of our faith in a little binary processor called the mind. So step back from that. Or here's another way of saying the same thing, then you keep going some more. Bhadri Narayan Swami is, I've heard him say it so many times, it's one of his favorite Prabhupada says, A sign of intelligence is to be able to hold within the intelligence two opposing things simultaneously. The binary guy can't do that. It's either this or it's that. It's either a one or a zero. How can... So the intelligence is this, what's the big picture? What's the intention of our acharya in saying this and that? What's the big picture? What's he doing here? That's intelligence. It's not that this has got to be, if this one's right, that one's wrong, or this one...
Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
He wants, in one sense, he wants to nourish bhakti. And so this may nourish bhakti, and that may nourish bhakti, and he's very clear that he's saying, you know, contradictory things over here and over there. He wants to nourish bhakti. And then in nourishing bhakti, there's different elements of nourishing of bhakti. We have to choose, necessarily. I mean, it's a nice exercise. Hermeneutics, it's called.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
This is a question that came up in class yesterday. We didn't really have a definitive answer on it. And as we study the yoga ladder in the Bhagavad Gita, there's this first level of Brahman realization and Paramatma, and then Bhagavan realization. But you know, the devotees just generally they don't experience so much of the Paramatma realization. It's as they advance in Krishna consciousness, there's more and more entry into appreciating and understanding Krishna, and we don't really, you know, most devotees had this kind of concurrence that, well, I don't see super soul. You know, how do we understand this when someone's Bhagavan realized, then automatically there's super soul realization, Paramatma realization. So, any thoughts on that, Arsh?
Yeah. I don't know too many Bhagavan realized souls. That's one thought. And then another is that part, it's not the essence, but part of Paramatma realization is accepting Krishna's arrangements for us, because the arrangements are arranged by Super Soul. We've had 2 3-day seminars with the theme of say yes to Krishna. And it comes down to, I mean, we didn't explicitly say it, but it's Paramatma. His arrangements. And rather than, you know, whining and complaining what the arrangements are or aren't, say yes to Krishna. And that's an entryway into the personal feature, because if you can't do that one, how are you going to get the personal feature? I mean, the personal feature in Goloka, you know, it's not always fun and games. It's not always going a way that they would want it to go. But the movement is love that brings forward the Bhagavan feature, but it has to come to the circumstances you're in, and you're accepting the circumstances that you're in, plus minus, without celebrating or whining. Just, you know, being in the position of accepting the Lord's arrangements and staying within the mood of serving Him.
It kind of coincides with what you're just saying, a really powerful point, where Prabhupada in page 91 of Nectar of Devotion, expecting the Lord's mercy, and he cites Tate Nukram Pamshukshu Nikshamano, and he says this should be the guide for all devotees. But, you know, I also, kind of along the lines of my question in the discussion that we had yesterday, there are, you know, the reciprocation that we get from the deities. It's a very prominent part of the devotees experience bliss when they do service.
Sure.
You know? Sure. So that's kind of like the Bhagavan.
Sure, absolutely.
Side of it, you know?
Sure. But it's not, I guess what I'm saying is it's not a bucket program. You're in this bucket, and then you move from this bucket to that bucket, and then you move to that bucket. Yeah, it's not like that. The whole thing is progressive and gradual, but we don't skip the Paramatma stage. I'm just responding to that feature. Last question, please. Ramiya, you want to do something over there? Okay. Okay, about two, and then we're calling it quits.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So I just wanted to add to Janmashtami Prabhu's question, like Paramatma realization. If we see Prabhupada's life, like in many instances, many devotees told Prabhupada that what they are thinking in their mind, Prabhupada knew ahead of time. And then, so from that, can we understand that Prabhupada was, he is at every point of time experiencing the Paramatma realization, and that's why Paramatma from his heart is letting him know about what he's saying to the devotees. From that way we can conclude that yes, he's always, even though he's telling about Bhagavan realization, but parallelly he is simultaneously always with Paramatma realization. Can we?
Interesting. Ramiya.
Can we understand that way?
I couldn't exactly follow all of what you were saying, but it's interesting. That's my response. Ramiya?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just wondering, we're talking about these vibhuti and the opulences of Krishna being manifested here in the material world.
Thanks for coming back to the topic.
Especially by the living entity. So if a living entity shows some superlative, opulence, we say, or position, is that like his karma, or is that like, the super soul allowing him to borrow some of this power opulence of Krishna? How does that work?
Well, the latter, this is a very interesting question, and the latter sounds something more like Shakti Avesh. Krishna empowers a living entity with some potency for something or other, in an outstanding way. But, take it down a notch a bit from a Shaktivesh avatar, just say someone who's very intelligent or someone who's very strong, or an opulence, someone who's famous, someone who's something. Those are decorations of karma, or arising from punya, and punya being decorated by some opulence.
So how is that connected with Krishna's opulence? Because Krishna has that opulence, then they can have it, or?
I was still pondering this other thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Say it one more time. This last is this.
I say, they're manifesting some superlative opulence,
yeah,
and they can manifest it because Krishna has it. Or?
Oh, of course, they can't manifest it otherwise. But the first part. All I understood the first part of the question is: are we to see that opulences with an individual the fruit of karma, or are opulences manifested by an individual some kind of vibhuti that's coming from Krishna? How are we to understand this way or that way? Commonly it's the former, but take a look at the list of the opulences, from the opulences of the Uchaishrava. I don't think that's karma. It's some special Krishna endowing a living entity with one of his vibhutis.
So
I don't know how to answer your question.
So that opulence makes him attractive, but it's actually Krishna's attraction. Because
it's Krishna's attraction in any case, supposing somebody's famous. It's Krishna's opulence. The attraction is to Krishna's opulence. But we may be thinking, the person, because they're exhibiting something. That's the fruit of their piety. But it's the attraction is for Krishna, in either case.
Okay.
Good karma, the superlative karma, or a vibhuti bearer.
Yeah, I was like wondering, it's like they're manifesting some opulence which is above the level of normal karma or something?
That's where I don't have the answer to your question. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada, keep? Yeah. Right.